Come on.
Quick ask before we get started today. I am working to help people lead happier and more contented lives. My part of that is money. So if you enjoyed today's episode, or if you've enjoyed past episodes, please take a minute and leave a quick review on iTunes. Subscribe. That helps the show climb up the rankings and helps more people find it. So thanks a lot. Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Bryce Suzuki. Bryce, are you ready to do this?
I am ready.
Excellent. Let's do this. Bryce is the managing partner of the Phoenix office of Brian Cave, Leighton Paisner. He has a wide range of specialty areas, including crypto and distributed ledger technology. I'm excited to have you on. Bryce, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Great. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on. So I am a commercial lawyer for Brian Cave. I manage our Phoenix office, as you mentioned. I really got involved in the law on the finance side, and including insolvency, bankruptcy, companies, troubled companies. And that led to a whole bunch of different areas, including in 2014, an entree into cryptocurrency, blockchain, and related technologies, and found it just absolutely fascinating, and have been developing a practice in that area ever since. And in fact, teach a course at the ASU Law School on blockchain law and policy.
Nice. It must be fascinating. To be working in an industry that is, I imagine, in its infancy, and have the opportunity to maybe be building a lot of the structure of the law around it?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. And one of the things that I teach in the law school course is that these young law students coming out of law school now really have an opportunity to help focus the policy around blockchain technology and help define the law and regulations around blockchain technology. And there is a huge need for that at the moment, where a lot of things remain undefined. I think we're getting there, and I'm pleased that the regulators haven't totally stifled this. To the contrary, I think they've embraced the technology and see a lot of its potential. But it's a balancing act, because it is, as with any new technology, something that can be used for, you know, ill-gotten purposes.
Yeah. So when we talk about regulators, is it federal regulators? Have we gotten to the point where there is a worldwide body that's giving guidance?
We haven't gotten to the worldwide body concept yet, and that is part of the challenge, because this is so global. With the stroke of a mouse click, or the stroke of an internet button, you can really, you know, transact across country boundaries and across the globe. And that's one of the things that we're going to have to grapple with and resolve as we move forward. In this country, it's largely been the federal regulators to this point, and it's been, you know, everyone from the IRS to the SEC to FinCEN, the Federal Reserve Board, which is technically not a regulator, but they've gotten involved because the cryptocurrency side of things obviously impacts their ability to affect monetary policy if the scale of something like Bitcoin gets as large as it potentially could get. So there's a lot of activity. The SEC in particular has been particularly active around ICOs, which are initial coin offerings, and other securities type regulations. And I think rightfully so.
There's so many different things every time you think about the IRS, obviously from a tax perspective and how that's going to work, Securities and Exchange Commissions, everything that's going on with that. But then what popped into my head was organizations like the FBI and the ATF. I'm sure that they'd be interested and have a very vested interest in understanding and having input in how this is all going to be regulated.
Absolutely. And, you know, the beauty and also the curse of crypto is its, you know, quasi anonymity, the ability to transact without knowing the identity of the person on the other end and without the need for a trusted intermediary like a bank or an escrow company. And that obviously poses dangers for terrible things, terrorism, you know, money laundering. And so you're exactly right. And one of the early high profile cases was Silk Road, which is basically a website of illicit goods that you could pay for with crypto. And they got very sophisticated very early using Bitcoin to buy these things. And that was shut down by the FBI. It's an absolutely fascinating story. And it's actually chronicled in a book that I'd recommend to all of your listeners, just for the entertainment and educational value. It's called Digital Gold. And it's just fascinating, written by Wall Street Journal reporters. And one of the best reads I've had the pleasure of reading over the last couple of years.
Oh, wow. I'll definitely check that out. So do you think that we've reached a point where, like, this is going to be a major part of how we transact things moving forward? It's reached a tipping point of being a fad that's going away.
I think, you know, there's sort of this, the theory of the hype cycle, where the technology is introduced and the early adopters sort of bring it forward, and then it gets overhyped. And then there's sort of this downslope period where people are sort of write it off, but then it stabilizes. And I think we're right in sort of that downsloping area. And I think what we're going to see is some stabilization, not necessarily around cryptocurrency, which I think will continue to be extremely volatile and may go the way of the dinosaur. But the underlying technology, blockchain, I think will be a transformative technology that touches on many day-to-day aspects of our lives for all kinds of different transactions. Some of the use cases that I think excite a lot of people really surround supply chain management, food tracking, diamonds. You know, De Beers is implementing a distributed ledger that helps them track the source of diamonds, so that people want conflict-free diamonds, they're able to use blockchain technology and really track a diamond from source all the way to the showroom. And I think we're going to see that with food service and with food suppliers, where, you know, you've got a batch of contaminated lettuce. Well, you can, through blockchain technology, which is sort of self-executing and self-recording, at the touch of a button, see where that batch of lettuce from that source went and where it sits on shelves right now. So I think the companies that are developing those kinds of technologies really are going to be the winners here. And they are, I think, going to transform the way we think about goods and services and the way we conduct our day-to-day lives.
Got it. And those are two really good examples right there. So if you just, from a really practical standpoint, if we're talking about, I think, you, let's just say Diamond Company, XYZ, or let's just use De Beers as the example. So in this example, they probably own diamond mines. And so they would be able to say, hey, this 5 ounce diamond came out of the ground here. It then was given to the, I'm going to do a terrible job because I've never really thought about what the steps to getting a diamond to market are, but it then went to party B and then to party C, and now it's actually for sale.
Yeah, no, that's right. And so if you think about the way supply chains currently run, I mean, it is an extremely difficult labor-intensive process. And there's actually a professor at ASU School of Management who has worked on supply chain-based technologies using the blockchain for some time. And, you know, if you think about a can of soda, I'll just change it from diamonds to a can of soda. If you have a QR code that's stamped, just like the UPC label is stamped, right, for the grocery store scanners, if you have a QR code that you can scan, any consumer can scan with his or her smartphone on your can of whatever, Diet Pepsi, Diet Coke, whatever it is, and that can pull up all of the information that is automatically input into a database using blockchain technology, and it can tell you where they got the aluminum for the can, where they got the water and how the water was sourced, where the ingredients came from, where it was bottled or canned, and where it was shipped and purchased. That's pretty mind-blowing. And that, you know, we don't have that currently, but that is the potential of blockchain to be able to inform consumers and to store that information in a self-executing way without the need for people to be, you know, hand punching in and looking at that chain of title, so to speak.
Wow, that is that's absolutely fascinating. It just, what was flashing through my head as you were talking about the, just how you would know the aluminum came from here, the water, the sugar, it was on a truck for this long, it's been sitting here, is that there's going to be very, very, very little, for lack of a better term, privacy moving forward. We're just going to know everything.
Well, and that's the other edge of the sword, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a big movement in the medical records space to use blockchain technology as stores of information that people can access. So if I go from Dr. A to Dr. B and that person needs my medical charts, if I grant permission, can that Dr. B tap into a national database stored on a blockchain that automatically updates? Those kinds of ideas are great, but if those records fall into the wrong hands, then you've got real issues.
Yeah.
And so there are lots of challenges around this. And, you know, EU data compliance is going to be a challenge. The right to remain anonymous under the EU regulations. How can you erase out something out of a blockchain if the blockchain is permanent and immutable? So there are a number of challenges, but you're absolutely right. The privacy issues, these are all going to be things that we have to grapple with. But I think, you know, given the pace of innovation and the incentives for companies to come up with these solutions, both financial and just from their own policy perspectives, I think we're going to see some pretty rapid innovation in the space.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And the amount of spending that's going on, I think I read this morning that that major companies were spending probably around $3 billion this year on blockchain technologies, and that was up 88% from 2018. So I can't imagine that those numbers aren't just going to get exponentially bigger and bigger.
I think that's right. And when you sort of peel the onion and look at the potential of this technology, it really is kind of an existential threat to various sectors. And so I think we're seeing some of those companies in those sectors saying, well, we can manage the disruption by doing our own R&D and developing this technology for our benefit, or we can be disrupted by a third-party company that basically makes us obsolete. Things like title companies.
Right.
You know, anywhere where you have the need for a third-party intermediary, blockchain can obviate the need for that. And so these are the kinds of companies, you know, large banking institutions, they're looking at crypto, alternative currencies. You have just a ton of resources being put into R&D. And because of those incentives, again, you're absolutely right. It's exponential year over year, the kinds of things that are being developed and the resources being thrown at development. So again, the potential technology is so transformative that I think once people understand that, companies understand that, they have no choice but to throw money and innovate or become obsolete.
Right. And balancing the risk, right, of if I'm XYZ Bank and I am one of the wealthiest corporations in the world right now, and so therefore I'm not just going to stay where I am and put my head in the sand. I'm going to try to be one of the innovators in this space. All that being said, if we do migrate to this new platform, this blockchain platform, and then all the users' information is exposed, it's interesting to me thinking about, it's just we almost have to do it, but then when we do it and we expose, how harsh will the penalties be, and what will the consequences be when everybody's information is when one company has so many people's information available and then it gets some kind of a breach. I guess it's already happening, but
yeah, the difference is data breach law is really a field unto itself. And because right now we have trusted intermediaries, they're almost more prone now to those kinds of attacks than they would be in a blockchain if the blockchain is managed appropriately. The one thing that the blockchain offers, I think, that traditional ledger systems like a bank account doesn't offer, is immutability. You really can't go back and change it. And so it's less susceptible to fraud. The record keeping is self-executing. The margin of human error is virtually zero. I don't want to say zero, but virtually zero. And, if they're maintained properly, they offer some advantages, several advantages, in fact, over the current systems that we have. The problem it will be, how much do you trust Institution A to keep that ledger with all of that immutable information? And to me, it's almost, the same question of right now. How much do you trust, name a company, Company X, with your information? That would not be resolved by use of blockchain, but the accuracy of the record keeping, the immutable characteristic of the ledger being kept, those kinds of things, I think, offer distinct advantages over what we have right now.
Got it. So what do you see as maybe one of the next or some coming legal battles?
Well, the crypto space, so cryptocurrency specifically, which is sort of the genesis of blockchain technology in some ways, at least its widespread use and adoption, I think we're going to continue to see significant volatility there. Bitcoin yo-yos up and down. I think it's back up around $10,000. I remember giving a continuing legal education seminar in 2016 and thinking, gosh, Bitcoin's now at $400. If it gets up around 600 again, I think we'll be doing really well. And of course, then last year it took that sprint up to $20,000, and a lot of people were throwing a lot of money at crypto assets, only to lose quite a lot of money. But it's back up to $10,000. I think we're going to continue to see volatility there. I think we're going to see brewing legal battles about wider spread adoption of cryptocurrency. The Federal Reserve has a vested interest, I think, in ensuring that it can affect its monetary policies. And if a large percentage of the country no longer uses fiat currency, U.S. Federal Reserve notes, as their primary form of currency, affecting monetary policy by the issuing body, the Federal Reserve, becomes far more difficult. And so, we're already seeing some of that with some of the cryptocurrency offerings that are being announced, and I think we'll see more of that. And so the blockchain use for things like supply chain, I think those will have privacy and other issues, but I think the big legal battle upcoming is going to be around widespread adoption of cryptocurrency.
Got it. I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, Bryce, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
You know, the one thing, and we really didn't get to it too much in our conversation, it can be very confusing as to what blockchain is. But if you just take a moment to try and understand what it is, which is essentially a shared ledger that self-authenticates and is self-executing, you will be far more educated than 90% of the population. So learn what blockchain is and what it does. And once you understand that and understand its potential, then you can make informed decisions about either investing in companies or using companies as a consumer.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets it. Come on.
Come on.
Bryce, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
My website for my law firm is www.bclplaw.com. And thanks for having me on. This is great fun.
Excellent. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Bryce your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. You can find him at bclplaw.com. Thank you again, Bryce.
Thank you.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together. Before I go, quick announcement. I've been asked by so many people over the past couple of years about how do I start a podcast that I've developed and released a course that will teach you exactly how to do that step by step, from figuring out the kind of show that you want to have to understanding how all the technology works behind it and then how to get great guests and keep the thing moving and how to grow it. So if you're interested in that, check it out. You can go to georgegrombacher.com/podcast course and you'll find it there. You can just go to the website. I'll also list that in the notes of the show.
What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on!